defeating the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who in many instances have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
What's going on? What's going on with you two? I feel like I haven't seen you guys as much lately. What's happening?
It's true. We've been all over the place.
Yeah, you went on tour.
Yeah. So I guess that's the main reason for the absence between episodes is like Cam and I were on the road for a while and then you were sick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been a lot. It's been chaotic.
Yeah. Yeah. I missed your Windsor City release show because I had 102 fever. It was great.
Oh,
yeah.
You should have just came. And
there was a part of me that was like, I'm just going to go. Yeah. I'm going to put on a N95 mask and I'm just going to waltz in there. But like, no, it would have been miserable. Why would I do that?
Well, it was miserable regardless.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you didn't have the fever, it would have been.
Why?
Oh, I don't know.
What do you mean? It was a great show.
Oh, I know.
Is it not a good show?
Were you like, no, it was actually a really good show. I'm just self-deprecating in the banter.
We're just looking at you like, what are you talking about?
I was like, what do you mean?
You're self-deprecation on this podcast?
I never do that. Stop shaming yourself.
But the tour was good. It was successful. You were happy with it?
Yeah, it was really weird because, you know, for me, like, for those who don't know, like, I mostly play music for a living. Like, I do some other stuff, but, like, my main thing is just being a guitarist and stuff. And we were on the road, which is great, but, you know, doing that during a genocide it's a weird feeling. You know,
Yeah.
I don't know, there's, like, a weird guilt to it.
Doing anything during a genocide just feels weird.
Being a normal human, even just going to work, but, like, when it's, like, this special thing that's like feels almost indulgent and it's like, oh, come out to my album release, I made an art piece and all this stuff, and I don't know.
I mean, you did, it is torn. I mean, your record is called How Can We Say Nothing, right?
Yeah.
And it's an allusion to the current genocide and then the ongoing things, right? So
Not originally, actually.
No.
No, it was a weird synchronicity. Because, like,
this was decided, like, way before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I put a picture of my grandparents who are Nakba survivors and were lifelong refugees.
So that was all decided before October 7th.
Literally.
Like, way before.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, a couple months before.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, it, like...
And even, like, really... the How Can We Say Nothing title, like... That was in reference to, like, how can you say nothing about, like, I don't know, the things that are going on in your life or, like...
Yeah, like, it wasn't... There definitely was, like, a political, like, edge to it, for sure. Because, like, all my work is, like, somewhat political, especially, like, my prior output. But this project was the one that was supposed to be, like, more personal, which is hilarious that it ended up being this, like, statement. And then... You know, one of the artists we were touring with was also Palestinian, and we were going through this weird thing of, like, just, is this okay right now? Like, should we be doing this? Should we be doing something else? Like, we're spending all this extra energy and time on something that almost felt like it was for us, but then we, like, got to the shows, and half the show was just, like, kind of rally vibes.
Yeah.
People were, like, every artist was talking about Palestine. At some of the shows, half the crowd were wearing keffiyehs. We went to a huge Palestine protest in Toronto,
yeah,
like before the show too, which was really cool. We should talk about that. Actually, it was really dope.
Yeah, yeah, we should.
Yeah, and then I don't know. I've just been like thinking about how art can play a role during these things and what that means. Because, you know, I got to see a lot of like my Arabic friends who I haven't seen in a while, like from Toronto and other places. And, you know, I just know, like, I know what I'm going through, you know, the last couple months. So getting to see them and what it meant to them as well to have like a show like this that like centers what they're going through as well. Like, I think, you know, there is a role for that, you know, not as like a supplement to like actual organizing and like doing the work, but yeah, there's a meaning in it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I just pulled up a quote from Kurt Vonnegut. Maybe we can talk about that in relation to this. Cause like
Edward Said quotes also very
good.
Yeah, so Vonnegut during the Vietnam War. He said, during the Vietnam War, every respectable artist in this country was against the war. It was like a laser beam. We were all aimed in the same direction. The power of this weapon turns out to be that of a custard pie dropped from a stepladder 6 feet high. Where he's basically like, it did nothing. Mm. His view was that it didn't matter that every artist in the world was against the war. The war still went on as though it was not. As it just didn't give a shit, right? Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that, like, I love Kurt Vonnegut quite a bit, and I like his politics and kind of who he was as a person.
Me too.
But and that's one of those things where it's like, it's kind of true though. Like, and that doesn't mean that it isn't something we should do and that it can't have some sort of an impact. But just that, you know, when it comes to these big political machines that are like really out of everybody's control. He's sort of mirroring that, like, well, what's the fucking point? You know, at the end right. of the day, like,
I mean,
I relate to that though.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say, Kim?
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, you were engaging everyone in these discussions about Palestine, and like every time that you performed, like, there was a talk about like your grandparents and, you know, the genocide, and I think it kept it in the conversation mm-hmm. in a very important way, and I think like people were engaging with it in a very important way also because it's so personal to you, and like people were able to talk to you about it. I think it like was helpful, actually. I think mm-hmm. it was like a net good or a net positive thing. Like, I don't mm-hmm. see it as like you were indulging. I know you're, and I know you don't feel like that right now, right. but
that's yeah. what I felt like going into it, yeah. though, for sure. And I also feel the like, as a Marxist, I feel the Vonnegut thing because mm-hmm. you know, artists don't have a lot of labor power, mm-hmm. and you know, we all understand, how do you actually make a difference? Well, you have to stop these things from actually happening on like a material level, you know, stop mm-hmm. boats from shipping, mm-hmm. all the things we always talk about, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But part of me also is looking at it from more of an ideal perspective, where I'm like, okay, we, you know, you have a community coming together in like a DIY space or whatever to share in music and connect and like really feel these things and yeah. have a space where like collectively we can go through this stuff together and feel it on that like deep visceral level. And as long as when we leave that room, we're not just leaving it in that room.
Yeah.
You know, as long as we're taking that with us and continuing it going, I think yeah. like that's where it's important. But as long as it just doesn't stop in these like moments, because that's when it becomes indulgent
mm-hmm.
and performative, because it is performative.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's designed to be.
Yeah, exactly. It's a right? performance.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't yeah. know, like.
I mean, for me, like, I know, like, does art make a difference? Like, probably not, again, on a material level, probably not. But I think it does on a psychological level, right? I think that art has the ability to connect people in ways that they would probably not otherwise connect, whether that's music or, you know, visual art or writing or whatever. And I do think that there's that maybe not what Vonnegut was saying is, like, it didn't matter that all these artists were against the war. The war still raged on. But maybe it mattered for people's psyches. Maybe it mattered to like mm. make people like not feel better necessarily, maybe that's not the word, but to feel something, right? Mm. Is that art is that thing that makes us feel something. It's the expression of who we are as humans. And yeah. so I think that is important, even if it's ultimately doing nothing on a material level on its own, right? Mm. So you take that sort of psyche, like you say, and you leave the room and then you go and do something mm-hmm. materially about it.
Exactly.
It's yeah. a reflection, I think, of how we're all feeling and how people are, you know, the times and how people are, you know, I guess digesting what's happening in this moment in time and like how they are seeing it. Like, I think it's just, whether it's meant to do good or bad, I think it's just a reflection of like where we're at. Yeah, I think like even graffiti is interesting. Like, I'm seeing a lot more mm-hmm. graffiti about like free Palestine mm-hmm. and free Gaza, and even like on the other side too, right? Like, I see a lot of like Israeli, pro-Israeli graffiti, and like it's just interesting to see that also manifest in like a graffiti sense too, and like just how like, you know, we walk around our cities and how we like interact with it.
Yeah,
it's like showing up in a lot of different ways,
and it makes you feel not as alone, right? Like, I think that mm-hmm. you know, it's one of those things where if we weren't all talking about it on an artistic level, like, would we even be talking about it? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like, I think that it is sort of like like I'm putting out a little torch that says I also believe in this thing.
Yeah.
And you should too.
Yeah.
And anybody who does, like, let's come hang out. Yeah. You know, let's actually like do something.
It's community building.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And whether or not that like again, it's a genocide, right? It's not, I think it can be frustrating that all of the actions that we see around the world, all of these different, even all these like major, you know, states and powers that are like against what's happening there, and you know, and nothing seems to really change or happen as a result of that. I think that can be a really frustrating and demoralizing experience to see, mm-hmm. like that even though most of the world, the vast majority of the mm-hmm. world wants this to end, mm-hmm. it won't. And I think yeah. that can be really demoralizing. But at the same time, what else do we do? It, how like, can we say nothing, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like it makes people more radical, though. Like, we're not yeah. being listened to, and so many of us are feeling this frustration.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it does tie into other aspects of capitalism, right?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's that you start pulling at the thread of the genocide, just like when you started pulling at the thread of police brutality or pulling at the thread of the housing issue, it reveals this whole system mm-hmm. that's not working for mm-hmm. most people, yeah. right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the same fucking system.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same enemy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe something good comes out of that, even amongst all this death.
I feel like it will. Yeah.
I think the culture matters too, like the cultural aspects of what we're talking about. Like, I don't want to just reduce everything to like the only thing that is good is like withholding your labor power and going on strike, because how do you get to the point where people are going to do that, like, without a change in like mass consciousness towards those ends? And I feel like culture and art and just like community things like this are often what shape people's consciousness and can help them get answers in a lot of ways. Like, for me personally, like, what radicalized me and got me interested in left-wing, not just left-wing politics, but just like politics as a whole and just thinking about the world around me, like, was music.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was same. Like being in grade school and listening to like System of a Down mm-hmm. and like hardcore bands who talked about all this stuff, and like that was my introduction to it. Like, System yeah. of a Down used to quote like Howard Zinn. Mm-hmm. And then I read People's History of the United States by Zinn, which was like the first formative book for me that like had yeah. me thinking about the world in these ways. And, you know, and here we are now, like, actually doing organizing. But
yeah.
it's, I think that's a part of it too, because like you have these experiences and then you take it with you, and it leads to other things. And that's really where I think there is like that dialectic between like the cultural thing and then also like the going on strike thing and blocking boats.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, for sure. It's interesting. I had a very similar trajectory. For me, it was Rage Against the Machine and Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan and shit like that when I was younger, because my grandfather used to listen to a lot of that stuff. And yeah, the same thing. Howard's in my physics teacher in high school handed it to me when I was in grade 11. Said, "You should read this. You seem to be," because I was complaining about my history teacher at the time and how she was, you know, wrong. Seemed to be wrong about most shit that I like. Mm-hmm. You know, I was, especially when it came to Indigenous issues, which I knew nothing about, but I could just sort of sense mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. what she was saying probably wasn't right.
Mm.
And he's like, "Yeah, it's probably not. You should read this book." Like, I can't say anything bad about this teacher, wow. but you should read this book.
You
yeah.
should put that on our book club list. Literally.
Yeah. It's a great it's entry totally point.
Happening. It's like so much history has been written after that, like modeled around his method. Like
mm-hmm.
it was a really important overcorrection from like the great man theory of history, of just like this person came along and did this thing, and then this person came up, like you had George Washington and then Abraham Lincoln
yeah.
and all this bullshit, right? But it's just like, well, how does history actually work? Like, what about the nameless millions of invisible people who are actually doing the things on the ground mm. and like how history is made by like the masses?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's really good.
Should we talk about like the show? That
yeah, I was gonna say it's a good segue into
yeah.
Does art matter? Let's do yeah. some art and find out.
Exactly. So the only thing that could free Palestine, in my prognosis, is fifth wave Midwest emo, the whitest music of
yeah,
all time.
Absolutely.
From the suburbs.
Yes. And actually, it's funny you say that, because I've been writing. I had a lot of new songs recently, and I had someone say they had a Midwest emo vibe, and I got real mad about it for a second. And I was like, yeah, all right, whatever.
It's either like the biggest insults ever,
or totally accurate, or both somehow. Yeah, so on March 29th, Friday, March 29th, which happens to be Good Friday, we are having a show at Fog Lounge in downtown Windsor, 157 University Avenue West. I don't know how I remember that, but I do.
I didn't even know the address.
Yeah, you know, some people might not know. But it's a little red building. You've probably been there before, if you're listening to this, or at least you're aware of its existence. And yeah, it's called Punk for Palestine, and we have three very non-punk acts. We've been told that we're not very punk
two
enough.
Two punk bands, three not punk artists.
Yes, yeah. First of all, how dare you? I'm on that bill, and I am very punk. So,
punk like the Ramones or the Clash?
Like Avril Lavigne.
Avril Lavigne punk. Guys, look
slash
at
Hillary Duff.
Yeah, slash Hillary Duff, exactly. The queens of punk.
So yeah. when we announce this, first of all, Instagram took it down like 3 or 4 times.
Yes.
Yeah, we kept reposting it, but then someone commented, and if you're listening to this person who, we know you from rallies and stuff, like, I don't know if you know who we are, but we're all aware of you. We're not trying to make fun of you, we're just like fucking around. Like, it's, you're a homie, we appreciate the support, but commented like, is this a punk show or are these bands just quote unquote indie?
And was that like a serious comment? Because I didn't read it as serious.
And then like Meander Green, who's one of the bands playing, was like, we are pop punk. And for instance, Meander Green is like a 90s like screamo band. Like, they're not. And he was like the Ramones or like the Clash? I feel like neither pop punk. I don't really like, yeah. Aren't they just like punk like, I don't know,
I've never
hardcore punk.
Like, punk is just one of those things that I always associate with an attitude more than I do a particular kind of music. Like, yeah. I know there's punk music, like, you know, you look at the Dead Kennedys or the Sex Pistols or something and go, yeah, okay, I guess that's punk, although Sex Pistols were basically a boy band, but that's a whole other discussion. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I mean, it's, I always find it funny because like I have a friend who said the same thing, like you're a punk, you fucking poser.
Like, oh my god, people
take it really seriously. Oh, that label,
geeky punk.
Yeah, like, I mean, the whole point of it is that you like, it is more of an attitude. It's more of a, like, you know, a fuck you.
Yeah,
it doesn't necessarily have to be associated with any particular thing. But yeah, I get why people are upset for it. Also, we just like alliteration, and Punk for Palestine sounds awesome. So how about you deal with it?
And like, Bog Moss and Meander Green are both like, maybe not like directly punk, but like they're punk influenced bands for sure.
Yeah.
Or they're influenced by like hardcore and emo and stuff. Like,
well, yeah. I would argue anyone that's standing up against genocide is punk.
Yeah.
That is inherently a punk thing to do. Also, so whether their genre is punk, it's what they're doing is punk.
And like, I'm mostly a folk musician, I guess. I don't really know what genre I am. I play acoustic guitar, so people usually say folk, and I have a lot of folk inspired stuff for sure. But like, what do you think inspired punk music? Mm. Like, was it not early folk music that like basically directly went to it? So like, you could say I'm the real punk here, but that's just an observation, folks.
Characteristics about me, but I don't walk around calling myself punk. It's more punk to tell people you're not punk than to sit there and say that you are punk. And whatever. If you want to know what I think that I am, I think that I'm just a rock chick. And I like to rock out. I just want you.
So she's so nappany, man.
Our guest today is Avril.
Like, she's so nappany. Her accent is so, comes out so hard in that. She's from Napanee, Ontario,
we
which
need
is
to, like,
right
redo
near where I grew up.
This is a reel and like do an ad for the show.
A rock is out.
More punk to say you're not punk.
I'm like a rock chick.
I'm a rock chick.
Yeah, guys, I'm not punk. I'm more like a rock chick.
Yeah. It's not cool to say you're punk.
Yeah, I know. It's cool to say that you're not punk. Then be kind of punk.
Exactly.
So March 29th, Meander Green, Bog Moss, myself, DJ Vodka Soda, and DJ...
Friendly User.
Bilal's
my
brother.
Nice, nice. Yeah, so it's gonna be a good night. All the money from the show... is going to go, all the money from the tickets to the show, which are $15, is going to go to PalestineAction.org, which is the organization that we brought up when we had Porch Collapse on a few episodes back, the organization that he helps out with. And it basically That organization helps fund mostly like legal fees and other sort of things for people who are putting their bodies in the way of shipments of weapons to Israel. So I think it's an excellent cause, helping out some direct action with your monies. So come out to that. Be fun.
Mm-hmm. Not everyone thinks that. It's such a good idea. We're not going to name names, but for those who follow us on Instagram,
yeah, I was going to say, this is very
the river and the land.
This is very.
We should have just kept it up.
We took down a lot of the stuff, but I'm sure some of y'all saw. We got a lot of weird pushback, not from Zionists on the show. Yeah. Or
on the show,
not Travis. Just from Zion. Yeah, it's Travis or sorry, not from Zionists in Windsor. Like not from the people you think, but from Muslims, mm-hmm. which was really weird.
Yeah, a little weird.
It was a little weird. I just want to make a couple points because I know we have like a good amount of Muslim listeners, and obviously it's Ramadan, and this is taking place at a music venue. There's pretty much no music venue in Windsor without a bar. Fog Lounge happens to have a bar. This is Canada. Every restaurant, pretty much everywhere, like, you go, there's alcohol.
Right? Yeah, likely. Any event space. It's a fact
of life. Any event space, especially in the music scene, because the music scene, unfortunately, because we don't have any public funding for anything or alternatives to this, is basically subsidized from alcohol sales. Like, that's just the way it is, right? And a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, we had a few people giving us shit for, I don't even know why, they weren't really specific.
the one person was definitely not specific, because I had a hard time even trying to figure out what the hell he was saying.
Yeah, there was an individual. What did he say? He was like, should we read it? Yeah, this person essentially said that he knows for a fact that every single person in Palestine would hate it because it's stupid, and all of the martyrs in Gaza are rolling in their graves, and they do not want any thing to do with the show. They wouldn't want the money for it, and that I'm a whitewashed Palestinian who is just using what's happening as an excuse to party with my friends and to add insult to injury. It's during Ramadan. And I was like, wait. Why would they be upset by this?
Yeah.
And I don't know. Unclear. He just went off. And
like, you know, it's 2.5 million people. It's like he's speaking on behalf of 2.5 million people, right, who I'm sure all think exactly the same about everything.
Exactly.
But yeah. Exactly.
But he knows. Because this guy is... Wait, no. This guy's actually not Palestinian. He's not even Palestinian. But he is the spokesperson for 2.3 million Palestinians.
Yeah.
Self-appointed.
Yeah.
Because they're a monolith. And then gets to tell people that we're not Palestinian, but he's more Palestinian because he knows.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're trying to do something. And we are people of limited talents. So, like, whatever talent that I can use toward doing something, literally anything, I'm going to try to do that. And I happen to be a decent singer-songwriter, so that's what I'm going to do. I mean, I don't really have much else in the way of skills in that regard. So, I don't know. I'm not too worried about it. I'm just going to go and play some songs and hopefully raise a lot of money for a good cause.
Yeah.
So
that's where, that's honestly what it should be. And it's just really unfortunate to me that, like, religion is getting in the way of, like, doing this kind of organizing. Mm. When, as far as I'm concerned, like, anything that is pro-Palestine or raising money for direct action and bringing the Palestinian cause into new spaces where it currently isn't, is a net positive.
Yeah.
And I also understand that a lot of people are Muslim and they're observing Ramadan. And, you know, we're not trying to exclude Palestinians. Like, a lot of Palestinians do go to Fog.
Yeah.
A lot of Muslims and Arabs do go to Fog. It's not like you step in there. Tom Lusher's holding a bottle. He's got a squirt gun full of vodka. And he's like, open up. No Muslims allowed. You have to get drunk. And I'm going to take the money from this alcohol and I'm giving it to Palestine. And they're going to take it. Like, obviously not. Like, it's not what it is. You do not have to drink. This is not a, like, alcohol-centric space. This is just a music venue, like any other music venue. Yeah. And just, like, if you're comfortable coming out, that would be awesome. You also don't have to.
Yeah.
And
yeah, if you still want to donate money to the cause, you can go to PalestineAction.org and donate directly. If that's the way you want to do it. I do see this as being something that can bring new people into this conversation as well, because like I have a lot of friends who you know, are pro-Palestine in a sort of vague kind of way, but they don't necessarily know, you know, what that means or what that's about, and they might come out to the show and learn some shit about what's going on, and like, mm-hmm. you know, in ways that they might not otherwise do, because they're probably mm-hmm. not going to go to a rally.
Exactly.
You know? So
we're going to be talking about this stuff at the show as well. Like, it's not like it's just like just a party. Like, it's going to be a, you know, the type of event where we're going to try to educate people on this and like have speakers and mm-hmm. all this stuff. Like,
mm-hmm. yeah. So anyway, March 29th. What time did we say we're going to do the 8 p.m. doors?
Yeah, like 8:30, 9, something yeah. like that. Just check Instagram or, yeah, any place.
Yeah, cool. Cool, cool. Well, welcome back to The River and the Land. We didn't introduce the show yet. Travis Laver, Cameron, Francis, Bilal, Rafiq. We're going to, I guess we're just like, we're already like 25 minutes in, so... There's the intro that you're all waiting for in case you didn't know what the hell you were listening to this point.
Yeah. I thought that was the podcast. I don't know why I thought we introduced before, but I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, I don't think I introduced it at all last time. So, yeah, I'm really derelict on my hosting duties over here. So, yeah, what else do we want to talk about today? I know that we keep promising stuff. But we're busy people, although I'm unemployed now, so I do plan on like actually putting some real effort into getting guests and making this more of a thing that we want to do. And we do have some guests, like we've been teasing guests on this show for like since we started doing it basically, but they are coming eventually, and so you don't have to listen to us exclusively all the time. But what do you want to talk about today? You, Bilal, you said you had something you wanted to bring up about.
I kind of wanted to talk about like this idea of downtown revitalization
mm-hmm.
and how that's being like branded as a thing. And city councilors, particularly Ronaldo Agostino, keep throwing out this word and these ideas that we're like cleaning up downtown, we're revitalizing it, it's recovering, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always super vague. So I want to talk about what that actually kind of means and how it's sometimes like a form of doublespeak.
Yeah.
And I guess the impetus for this is he made a post, I guess the last time we were supposed to do a podcast when we were going to talk about, so like 2 weeks ago or something,
mm-hmm.
maybe a week ago, where he posted a Windsor Star article about how the H4 hub, which if you don't know is the homelessness and housing help hub at Waterworld, which is like it's like a center where people could access all kinds of services if you are a person experiencing homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
About how this place, which had been at Waterworld since it was open, is going to be moving, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is going to be moving, but they have zeroed in on like a new spot for it. And he was like, yeah, this is a huge win for downtown. And on the surface, we're all like, yeah, that sounds great. It's getting a better facility, probably, maybe some more funding. That seems like a great thing. You read the article, though, and it's they don't specify where it's actually going to be, because I think they learned their lesson from SavePoint that when you move these services out of downtown, the community gets really pissed.
Or the Mission, when they were planning on moving the Mission way out to like a field on McDougal.
Exactly.
At one point.
Yeah, they always do this.
Yeah.
But Dawkins did say that it's going to be only 2 kilometers from downtown. Only 2 kilometers from downtown.
Cool. That's nothing, guys.
I don't know if anyone listening has been homeless or is homeless right now, but you know that if you're experiencing homelessness, you only have so much capacity to get to the different services that you need.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Within a day, and they're all downtown. So if you're in the program, like at Waterworld, and you're getting services there, and then you know it closes and you need to go to the Mission in time, or you want to go to the Women's Center, which is like less than 1 kilometer from Waterworld, it's right down the street, or if you need to go to Positive Pathways and get harm reduction material or whatever you have to do, like it is vital that these things are close together, because all the homeless people are downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a reason for that, right? Like, that's not just an accident.
Exactly.
So I'm actually going to read something from my dissertation. So as most of you probably know, I did most of a dissertation on homelessness and panhandling in the downtown core from a study I did in 2017. And this this quote was actually from a guy named Gramps, who I in the original, obviously in my dissertation, I couldn't name who he really was, but he is now dead. So I feel fine like attributing this to him as a person. His name was Vaughn. He used to have a black lab dog, and he was in a electrified wheelchair. So you probably do. If you're around for that, for those number of years, you probably remember who he was. And he had this really great quote about how you don't have any goddamn time to do anything when you're struggling with poverty. And he wasn't homeless, but he had experienced homelessness a lot. He knew a lot of people who were homeless. And so I'm going to read this quote from him. He said, "I think people would be shocked to learn how busy you are when you're homeless. Get up, get out of the shelter, go to Timmy's and see who's there. Maybe a buddy who said you could maybe live with him is back. You can't call him. You have to find him. So go to the soup kitchen or the church, get some food. You have to walk. Sometimes you have to walk for miles. You can't just take the bus. You have no money. You left your Porsche in another city. Then you're hungry again. So you find the next open kitchen. If you can find anything in the dumpster, maybe that cook you know is working and he can sneak you some free food. Go back to Tim's. Still can't find that guy. He's never around. He's probably lying to you anyway. Fuck that guy. Now your feet hurt. You're not young anymore. It's getting cold outside. You still don't have anywhere you're going to sleep. Shelter might be full unless you get downtown so you can get in line. You don't get there in time. Now you have to scramble. The youth center gives out Tim's cards. Not young anymore, but you heard they'll give them to you anyway. It's all the way in Walkerville. Another walk. Walk back. Go to Timmy's. You buy a coffee so the workers don't kick you out. Maybe you can sleep. At least you'll be warm. Rinse, repeat." So, like, this idea that, you know, people have all kinds of time to just do shit. You spend your entire day just logistically trying to survive, getting your next meal, figuring out where you're going to sleep, trying to find your friend who can maybe do something for you, you know, like making those connections with people so that when things get really rough, you might be able to ask them for a favor. Like, that kind of stuff just takes time. And if you move essential services outside of the downtown where all that other shit is, you're just adding to the time that people have to take in their day to get from one place to the other. So they're not going to use the new service, or they're just going to be more fucked.
Thank you for sharing that. I think a lot of people don't realize that, right? Like, I think people are like, why don't these people just get a job? They're just sitting around or whatever. It's like, they are not.
No, they're not sitting around. Do you ever see them sitting around?
It's a full-time job. And how are you supposed to work? And if you say you're homeless, how are you supposed to get a job and then cut out all those important things that you have to do throughout the day where you have to walk everywhere? Like,
yeah.
And I don't, it's really like disheartening to hear that they want to move the service 2 kilometers outside of downtown. Like, that is so disheartening. It really shows you that they do not care about these people, and it's just about like gentrifying the neighborhood and like making rich people feel more comfortable walking around downtown.
Yeah,
it's all about just how do we make rich people comfortable on the street. It's always about hiding it or like covering it up. It's like, because if people see it, they're going to want to point the finger somewhere. And the politicians like are just like, well, let's just hide it then.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
But they're going to die if they have to go out, like, outside of downtown to get their services. They're going to, like, potentially, they might die because they can't get what they need quick enough.
Like, yeah. And it's just, and again, like Bilal was saying, this language of cleansing and, like, all this other stuff. It's almost genocidal language. I mean, it's not even it is genocidal language.
Cleaning
it's like... We're gonna cleanse this area of these dirty, disgusting people who like make it bad downtown and make nobody want to come here. So we're just gonna take them and move them somewhere else, and then we're gonna revitalize downtown. It's gonna be much nicer.
Yeah,
it's like there's still gonna be fucking people downtown. They're just not gonna use H4 anymore.
Yeah,
they're just gonna be hanging around nowhere.
Exactly.
You know, and like it's not gonna help. You have to put services where people already are congregating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same, like, it's Israeli type shit where they'll be like, oh, we're not, what do you mean? We're not ethnically cleansing people. We're not displacing them. But what they're actually doing is they'll be like, oh, it's voluntary. But it's voluntary in the sense that you've created conditions where they have no choice but to leave. It's not like all the time, obviously, no, Israel does directly kick people out, but a lot of the time, it's like they just make it impossible to stay in a certain area.
Yeah,
so it's like technically voluntary, and it's like no, with downtown, you're just kicking these people out. You're making it unsustainable for them to be around because these services save lives in so many ways.
And again, like we talked about last time, if you want to make services like H4 no longer exist, which I think like that would be good, mm-hmm. in the sense mm-hmm. that like if people didn't need to use these services, they wouldn't exist, mm-hmm. right? Then I don't know. Maybe we should get them fucking homes. Like, what is, like, why do we do all this shit? We do all this shit. We put all this money into these, like, these services, and we move them wherever we want people to go, and we try to, like, direct them to, and again, this soft power of, like, well, we're just moving the services out here, so maybe they'll just kind of go there. But there's never any fucking discussion about solving the problem. Mm-hmm. When it comes to those questions, it's like, you pull out too hard, too complicated, can't do that. You know, but sounds you're like doing all this convoluted bullshit mm-hmm. to get people to go to a field on McDougal mm-hmm. or whatever the fuck, or some industrial park in the West End. I don't mm-hmm. know where they plan on moving this shit. Mm-hmm. That's 2 kilometers from downtown. Like, you're, what are you looking at here? Right. There's not like a whole lot of space.
What happens to that neighborhood if these people are a problem, and if downtown cannot be revitalized so long as they inhabit these spaces, and so long as there's poverty around? What happens when you move the poverty somewhere else, like to that neighborhood? Mm-hmm. Is that going to need to be revitalized? And we're just shuffling these people around the city indefinitely?
Yeah.
Look, at what point, exactly as you're saying, like at what point do we ask the question, why the fuck do we need these services in the first mm-hmm. place?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's a societal failure, mm-hmm. honestly. Like, I often think, like, because we're so inoculated in, like, capitalist cultural hegemonic thinking, where like our norms are so shaped by just like, you know, they're norms for a reason, right? They're like our reality and our world often makes sense to us because it's just the only way that we've seen things. It's what is commonly around us. So we see something like homelessness and we're like, oh yeah, it's just a thing, you know, it's homelessness. We don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
But like if you brought in someone from like Mars or something, you know, brought
from
in an
Finland,
from for Finland. Instance, from Cuba, like, yeah, bring in exactly. someone from like a different culture or anything, and you look at, and they were to take a look at our society, the aliens would be like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah,
like, you have all this stuff, and you're just like, you know, these people are gonna live in absolute misery.
Yeah,
and these people get all these nice things.
Yeah,
and it's."
And we're going to blame it on their character. They're just bad people that make bad decisions, and that's why they're... That's where
literally,
they're, where
we're
they're
worse at. Than, like, monkeys. Like, bands of gorillas don't do this to each no. other. Like, there's no homeless gorillas.
There's actually really not any other species in the world where we do this.
It's like a separate caste
yeah.
of members of society mm. who are just like, well, they're just worse. You know, we don't take care of them. Who was it that Margaret Mead... The anthropologist or anthropologist, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
She was asked famously, like, what's the first sign of a civilization being actually formed? And she responded by saying, well, a healed femur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Because, like, that is what civilization is when people are taking care of each other in that society.
Where they would otherwise die if they weren't taken care of.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, by that measure, we're completely uncivilized. Like, yeah. Western capitalism is a barbaric culture where we allow, like, our fellow people to just, like, die on the streets when there's fucking empty homes.
Yeah.
And where we're going out of our way to make things worse for them and be like, oh, this is a win for downtown. It's a win for the neighborhood. But by the neighborhood, they mean the businesses whose owners live in fucking Tecumseh.
Yeah. Exactly. Or from the very few people who live down here that aren't poor, which, you know, aren't many people, really, at the end of the day. Like, most people who live down here, pretty poor.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they are consulting with, like, people experiencing homelessness
God,
or addiction
no.
or anything like this? Because I know with SafePoint, they did.
Yeah.
And then the problem with that move and Agostino's move to move SafePoint from a core downtown 500 meters away from H4... where a lot, there'd be a lot of overlap in services mm-hmm. to wherever the fuck else. The strongest argument against that was like, yo, we did these consultations and we asked the experts, we asked the people who require these things, we asked the community, and they all want it here.
Yeah.
With this, I don't know if there's been anything like that, right?
No.
I might be wrong. Maybe we'll find out after. But I can't. For some reason, I can't see the experts thinking it's a good idea to move that out of downtown. I mean, you're... technically an expert on them.
Yeah, yeah, no, you it's are not. An expert on it's this. Not. It's not a good
you
idea.
Get a doctorate.
Yeah, it's not a good idea. Again, in there has been cities that have done things like this where they take an essential service like a mission or something like H4 and moved it out of downtown, and people just don't use it. That's what happens. People don't use it, and then it closes. So you sink a bunch of money into building this new facility or retrofitting another facility, and like, oh, look, it's this great thing, it's this amazing thing, and no one fucking uses it.
You might as well just throw the money away.
Because it's like it's an hour walk away from where they need to be otherwise. They're not going to fucking go there anymore. They're going to go find somewhere else to go. Mm-hmm. That'll mean that the mission doors are going to be even more full.
Yeah.
You know, it'll mean that the other services like Positive Pathways and the Women's Shelter are going to be more taxed. Mm-hmm. That's all it's going to do.
Mm-hmm. And these are also different services, too.
Exactly.
Right? Like, you get different things. You can't get everything everywhere. There are certain essential things that you'd need at one space that you might not be able to access at another one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, and coupling that with the closing of SafePoint, I think is an important thing too. Mm. It's like there's a political there's a political mission happening here, right? It's to fuck poor people, and that's the thing, like. People always say, like, well, how do you realistically solve homelessness? And again, I don't mean to bring this up every goddamn episode, but if you have the people to do the work and you have the resources to build the thing, you can do whatever you want in Canada. Literally whatever you want. So if our problem is that we don't have enough housing, then we can just snap our fingers and build more fucking housing. We can just provide people with the things that they need to live. And that might sound really simplistic and naive, but that's actually what happens. And if you ever look at any other place in the world that has even approached solving this problem, and there are those places, that's what they do. What do you think Cuba did when Cuba, after Cuba and the revolution, what do you think? Do you think that they had money? Do you think that they just had money around that they could use to build more housing, to nationalize their farming industry, to do all this stuff that needed, all the infrastructure they needed to build to have healthcare and education? Do you think they had money? It was Cuba. It was Cuba post-revolution when every other country in the world was telling them to go fuck themselves and put them under steep embargoes. Mm-hmm. So how did they do it? They just did it. They had the people. They had the resources. Yeah. They just
used their labor and their resources in large part. And to be more specific, a huge part of that was also just like internationalism and the fact that the Soviet Union was de facto subsidizing Cuba as well as like Eastern Germany and the whole Eastern Bloc to the tune of like billions of dollars.
Right. Which, but where did they get those billions of dollars?
It was an injection of capital basically from like other countries as well. But
how did the Soviet Union afford it, right? How did they afford any of this shit?
Exactly.
Right?
Well, it's just about turning your economy from like a commodity, profit driven economy where things have to have like this exchange value, which results in a profit, compared to just like, okay, we have people to do things, we have things to do, we have the resources to do it. Let's do the things and use that to pay for people to be able to survive.
Yeah.
So they could do the things more. And it's like, well, it just makes more sense.
You can point to it in this country too, how when Canada decided to institute universal healthcare, right? Which is relatively recent in our past, in the 1950s, right? It's not like it's been here forever. It just was ordained upon us. How did we do that? How did we go from a system that was largely privatized to a system that was largely public? How did we pay for it? We just did it. And it sounds so simplistic, and I'm sure there's gonna be people out there who are like, well, you don't understand economics. No, like, I actually kind of do, is the thing. And like, you can just fucking do it, is the thing. Canada, we are again very lucky. We have a fiat currency, we have sovereign currency, we can do whatever we want, basically. And if we want to solve homelessness in this country, there are countries who do it, not even communist countries. Like we were pointing to Cuba or the Soviet Union, like we said, Finland, Sweden, Denmark. Most of the northern European countries have either completely eliminated homelessness or it's so minuscule of a problem that they can deal with it very quickly.
Exactly. And because of decades and decades of like robust social democratic welfare state kind of initiatives. Which,
and that's still under capitalism. Exactly. They didn't even have a revolution that got rid of capitalism. They're still capitalist nations.
Exactly. So it's like you can do a lot, but ultimately, you know, we talked about how at a certain point you do have to get rid of capitalism to keep these things and have them stable and permanent and not have to keep fighting for them against like austerity programs and against reactionary politicians. Like, yeah, but it still goes to show that with the amount of wealth we have under capitalism, even today, there's so much we could still do. what is the saying? Like, poverty is a policy choice.
Yeah,
it literally is. It's a decision because there's no real scarcity.
No,
we're it's in manufactured. We're in an era of like super abundance of everything, and we just decide not to use it.
Yeah,
for those things. I don't know.
People. Yeah, we have more than enough food for everybody in this country to eat twice as much as they need, but we put it in locked buildings and don't let people have it unless they have the capital to shake it loose. Right, which is like, again, you bring someone from a different planet into this situation and go, but you have the food and you have hungry people. There's a match there.
Bring just a 6-year-old like, child.
Yeah.
I don't know. And they're like, yeah. Oh, I'm hungry. I want that. And you're like, well, you can't have it. And it's like, why?
Because you can't contribute to the profit margins of the people who own it. That's literally the entire answer to that question, right? And it is like, you know, and like we were saying before off mic, people who experience homelessness and extreme poverty are not always pleasant people to be around. They're probably, on average, they're much more unpleasant than the average person because, well, they're in a shitty, desperate situation. And I don't know, have you ever had a bad day? You think that it's affected your mood? Imagine not just having a bad day, but having the worst possible situation a human being can be put in every single day with no escape. Imagine how that might affect your mood. You might not be the most pleasant, easygoing person. You might be conspiratorial. You might be violent. You might be like, you might have a predisposition to like, you know, stealing shit and being a general pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not sitting here suggesting that homeless people are saints. Quite the opposite, you know, like, but at the same time, I don't hold them to the same behavioral standards that I do with someone who has a locking fucking door.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So,
well, particularly because like mental health and addiction issues overlap with homelessness so much too, and like it's all these compounding things that they're going through. But I don't know, I have worked in harm reduction and worked with this demographic of people, and like what's amazing to me is how like you're right on like there is a lot of like behavior of a certain kind, but you'd also be amazed at how many of them are like fucking sweethearts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
total, like some of the best people I've ever met.
Yeah,
and the most generous and caring, like trying to take care of the people who should be working for them. And that's the amazing thing too, is like just the resilience that they are able to show in so many ways.
Yeah, and I don't mean to paint it in either direction. Yeah, just exactly. To say that when you see people behaving badly, there's a reason for it. Exactly. It's not just because they're bad people.
Versus like you have fucking Karens in Walmart yelling at employees and stuff and being way worse than I've ever seen a homeless person do. Like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, like, some of my best friends for a number of years during and after that study were people who were experiencing extreme poverty again because that generosity. There's a lot of people who, like even if they do sometimes behave in ways that we wouldn't like, you know, even those people, like, a lot of the time, they're just human beings. They're often human beings who are just trying to make connection, right? Yeah. And that sort of idea that human beings, like, network with people, with other people to try to better their own situation, that happens on the street, too. Like, that quote illustrates, right? Mm-hmm. Like, well, there was that guy at Timmy's that said he might have a place to live. Or, you know, there's this chef that I know who will, like, bring food out to me if I go to the back door of the restaurant. They actually... People everywhere, they do this in all facets of life, but people try to gain connections with other human beings, not just to better their own situations, but also because like that's a friendship, that's something that they can rely upon, right? And so again, you move the services out of downtown, maybe there are no restaurants around who do that. You know, what are you going to do at 3 a.m. when you have nowhere else to go? You don't have a Tim Hortons nearby, or you don't have like some place that you can go where you know the staff, and you know the staff isn't going to kick you out for just like sitting at a table and keeping warm.
Yeah.
Right? Like these things matter, these connections with other mostly working class people who also live and work in these spaces are really important. And so taking these services and moving them to where they don't know anyone, where they now have to reestablish all those connections, or maybe those connections don't exist at all, is not helping anybody.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about that?
Yeah. I don't know much to add to that.
Yeah, we'll have to continue to look at that. Yeah, keep an eye on that story and just kind of see where that goes. Because, I mean, I hadn't heard about it. Again, this is one of those things where I am noticing that since the whole Facebook news ban thing that I'm just not following the news as much. Right? Like, you have to be way more intentional about following the news now. Which I got, for years, I got used to just it being fed to me on various social media. I didn't have to go looking for it. Now I do. I have to have like the stupid CBC app on my phone and the Windsor Star app on my phone. but yeah, I mean, most of the news on there is still fucking hot garbage, but you know, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else do you want to talk about? What else you got?
How long? Sorry, go on.
No, we got like maybe 10, 15 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm done. I don't know.
I can't think of anything else.
I've done it all, yeah.
I'm going to shake off the rust.
Yeah.
I'm like okay ending it here if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Is there anything you want to talk about?
Probably.
Oh, okay.
My brain's just not functioning.
Okay.
We're all brain dead today, yeah, no, guys. Yeah. Maybe a shorter one.
Well, this
one.
Has been an hour.
Yeah, it's close.
Yeah, that's
fine.
All right,
yeah.
Fuck it. Yeah, we'll have a real episode next week.